Let's return to Consult Us on Business on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's your host, Frank Visconti.
If you're just joining us, we are speaking with Jonathan Wilcox, one of the top political analysts and political speechwriters in the country. We are talking about the economic climate here in the United States and what we're going to be in for in the next couple of days as Republican candidates, as well as the president, roll out some type of plan to try to turn things around here in the United States. Jonathan, you're back with us, I'm sure. And as we know, in August, the government was able to eliminate 117,000 jobs from the public sector. One comment you made is that we might see some type of recommendation or plan by the president, or an element of his plan, to increase government spending. Would that be counterintuitive to what they're doing now in trying to pare down the actual public payroll?
Yes, the conflict between the rhetoric and real life. That's exactly what you're going to see. The president, on one hand, can talk about the reductions that have been made. My view is that their design is to have them mostly be in defense or defense-related industries and the economic multiplier that comes from Pentagon spending. So that is a cheap target. And at the same time, though, the president will want to talk about the things that the government can do and the things that the public sector can do to ignite the economy. I mean, it is part of their entire worldview. And I want to go back to another point we made earlier, which is about what can the government do. And I think that we've become so used to having hands-on control of these things. And I go back to a great quote from Ronald Reagan, who I did write for. And so legend has it that Ronald Reagan said his advisors are giving him short-term economic advice. We need stimulus. We need economic moves. He said, don't just do something, stand there. And, of course, what he meant was the government's appropriate role in response to our economic condition is to provide broad, predictable policies that have application to the greatest number of people possible and that allow the private sector to grow and thrive outside of the public sector's architecture, rather than figure out the best ways to navigate it. And I think that more than anything else, that is the one conceptual worldview that eludes the president, and I think eludes his political supporters, who believe, and to the contrary of I think all evidence, but certainly have to, will go forward in this way to animate that those kinds of moves, short term, stimulative, are the nature and breadth of an entire economic philosophy. And I wouldn't expect much different on Thursday.
Okay. How are you on conspiracy theories?
Try me.
Yeah. Let me throw a softball up to you here. On one side, the president just may not have the experience, or his advisors may not be directing him in the best possible way because of lack of experience. That's one option. The second option is he is doing it on purpose. He is actually trying his best to ruin the U.S. economy in order to eventually create a situation where you have to have martial law and the government begins taking over businesses, taking over banks, insurance companies, which they have already started doing. And if you just have some of the numbers become a little bit worse than they actually are, for example, the unemployment rate, drive it from the effective rate of 17% up to 25 or 30%, where the government now has to step in and manage as many things as possible, including the healthcare system. Do you think that conspiracy theory is even plausible?
I was all ready to say that, yes, the NCAA is definitely out to get the college sports teams that I like the most. But now that I've passed by that conspiracy theory that I believe, let me put it this way. There is, I think, a hostility to entrepreneurialism, a hostility to the free enterprise system, hostility to the private sector among people who now populate a significant amount of the public sector. And I think they've been marinating in that philosophy for a long time, and using it and utilizing it to get elected and stay in power. I believe broadly that the moves that the Obama administration has made and have been enunciated by the president, I believe, honestly, Frank, he thought they'd be popular. I honestly believe he thought they would work. I honestly believe he thought they would redound to some benefit. Now, whether that benefit ultimately meant creative control, command and control of certain industries, that is a sort of intellectual question, because there is an intellectual hostility to the things I mentioned before among, I think, a segment of our political leaders.
Well, I understand exactly what you're saying, but let's deal with a very simple fact, a reality here in the United States. 80% of all people employed in the United States are in the private sector.
Right.
Okay? To take the position that I should not direct any of my attention or money into driving performance enhancement in this sector, it is almost unconscionable to me. How can anyone not come to that conclusion?
Well, that is two reasons. These are ultimately political questions. If your supporters are in the public sector, then you are going to be sympathetic to the public sector. If your belief and supporters are in the private sector, you will be differently oriented. I go back to my other point before, and I don't want to make too much of this, but I believe I saw this as clearly as I've ever seen anything in the two decades plus that I've seen public policy. Because the national economy grew essentially overnight, with I think nothing that the government did about it, and I think that because everything became more efficiently essentially overnight, that it just pumped so much more money and opportunity into the system, then the opportunity became to spend it as fast as possible. And I truly believe that if you look at this economy now, which I call the service economy, it is basically the architecture of the public sector mentality. Service jobs, the growth of these sectors, benefit packages, that is the language now of the public sector economy. So even though you are technically correct with your very boring old fuddy-duddy math about 80% of the economy is the private sector, it's the 20% with the impact, not the 80%. Now, I would go further to say if the 80% wants to flex its muscles, it should get its act together. But instead, I think it has gone the other way, which is to cut deals and cut your marks and cut out little corners of the economy, favors and benefits, and worked within a system that ultimately, I think, will consume it.
Okay, well, we have a presidential election coming up in a little over a year, and we know what we're going to be dealt with on the Democrat side. Let's turn the discussion to the huge number of Republican candidates are out there with a slant on who will or could be the best resource for America relative to small business and the creation of jobs. Do you have any favorites?
Well, I'll quote Michelle Bachmann's now former campaign manager to say this is really a two-person race, and it's not one of his candidates. It was the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, the former governor of Massachusetts, well-known man, Mitt Romney, and that is where I think the race is shaping up. I don't think that's very penetrating insight to say, but ultimately I think that these races, no matter how many candidates run, you talked about the huge number of candidates, talked about the large field, these things tend to come down very quickly and come down very specifically into one or two people races. It's really about the way it is. And the modern primary political system is meant to wrap up quickly, not go on for very long. So I think that if you look at where we are politically today and economically today, obviously, you have two, I think, competing but complementary at the same time economic viewpoints, which is the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, who can point to, at least on the margins and the numbers, an impressive economic growth condition. Texas claims it has created half of the jobs in the Obama presidency. And Mitt Romney, who has probably as much private sector economic experience as anybody who's ever run for president, who I think are going to make that the hallmarks of their campaign. So then it's going to come down, I think, to the actual campaign itself. Right now, you have to believe Rick Perry has an advantage. I think he has institutional advantages among the Republican electorate. And then I think the fact that he is a proven vote-getter in now the second largest state in America is going to benefit him. Now, that campaign will go through its bumps and its bruises. And he'll have to prove himself in environments in which he's not proven himself before and where Romney may be a little more tested. But there is a political naturalness to Perry, and I think right now among a lot of the Republican regulars, a lot of my clients, they're definitely gravitating towards him.
Interesting. Sarah Palin, Rudy Giuliani, still on the bubble. They going to jump in, or are they just going to work from the outside and stir things up?
Well, anybody can run any time, and I think it's become easier to run and enter races later, and it's become easier to get financed in a way that it used to be almost impossible to get financed this late in the campaign. But let's work our way up. I think Rudy Giuliani's day has passed in a couple of different ways, and certainly his race for the presidency last time is considered to be a real disaster. I think there are other factors that really sort of, you know, in a sense conspired to keep it from really coming about, but I cannot imagine that he has breadth of support. But Sarah Palin's the really fascinating one here, which is there is probably no individual who is better known and appreciated on one political side, but who has more situational detractors among the same. There's a devastating note in the Wall Street Journal today, a leading journal of conservative opinion, that really takes her to task. And for the first time, I think, is really attacking Sarah Palin on her style, on her tempo, on her tenor, and as well as sort of the image she is projecting. I think they appreciate her intensity, appreciate her values, and I think they agree with technically what she's saying. But they also believe that she has not used these intervening years since she was the vice presidential nominee to really grow as an individual and in a sense become sort of a media celebrity with a thin skin towards the towards political reporters. And I think that ultimately what they're doing is making a broadside to sort of keep her out of the race and accelerate the process by which, you know, this tease will have to end. And she'll ultimately have to say that she will not run. I'd be very surprised if she decided to get into the race.
Yeah, I would too. So in your opinion, and we need to start actually winding this up, this has been a tremendous interview.
Just getting started.
I know. I can't believe we've gone through 30 minutes already. If you were going to make the call today, you think Rick Perry's going to get the nomination?
Yeah, I mean, if I had to put a dollar there, but you know, what I want to caution is that, you know, there's a lot of front runners that stumble and stumble hard. But I do think that, you know, this is not a traditional campaign. This is a campaign against an incumbent. And so the person who is animating this campaign for Republicans the most is President Obama by any objective measure. And so what is in the back of the minds of all the Republicans who are thinking about who they're going to choose, they want to choose the person they think can beat the president. And I think they have a reliability that the people running, both men and women, share their values. So it's really going to be about electability. And in this way, I think that is where Perry is making his argument today. Yes, he shares their values. Yes, he'll be reliable. He'll be predictable. They think he'll do a good job. But what they really mean the most is, can you stand up to the president? Can you run the kind of campaign? Can you campaign that kind of way and connect with people? If you can do that, everything else will take care of itself.
Jonathan, I cannot thank you enough. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Jonathan Wilcox, one of the top political speechwriters in the country, giving us his insight. I want to thank you. I hope we have this opportunity again, because there are so many other points we can talk about. Maybe as the race develops, we can touch base again, and we'll have you back. So
have me anytime. I will see you on the radio.
Thank you so much. Hey, when we return, I'm going to share with you some of the questions that came into me last week by email about running businesses and questions about businesses. So please stay tuned. We are on TalkZone.com, and we'll be right back.